Welcome to Spectrum from China America Radio, a weekly public service production featuring news, information, and stories of interest to our China America Radio listeners in the United States and around the world. Now, here's this week's host, Steve Warren.
Our guest on Spectrum this week is Rich Swingle. Rich, welcome to China America Radio.
Thank you. I'm pleased to be here.
You are the first Swingle I think I've ever met.
Oh, okay.
I remember, I'm sure you may recall the days in the 60s and 70s, there was a classical group called the Swingle Singers.
I surely do. I've been asked many times if I'm related.
If you're related to those Swingles.
The answer is that I don't specifically know, but there was a New York Times article on Bart Swingle that said he was from Switzerland, as my family is.
Really? Okay.
We're descended from the brother of Ulrich Zwingli, the Swiss reformer. So,
wow, how very nice.
If you find out if he was related to the Zwinglis, then that specific family of Zwinglis, then that's your answer.
Well, I've spent a good deal of time in Switzerland. I was a teacher at a radio school in Montreux for about 6 years.
Oh, wow.
A couple of weeks every December during the Marche de Noël season in December. And so I've been just about everywhere in Switzerland.
Wow.
Beautiful, but happy your Swissness shines through. So anyway, you're here. You're an actor and a fine actor, and you've got hundreds, if not thousands, of credits of films and stage and showcases and one-person performances and lectures and tours et al. But we're here today to talk about something apart from that, included in that, but apart from it, because there's a specific historical event that became a motion picture that many people are familiar with, and then there's a backstory and a forward story that most people don't know about. So let's start with the movie that probably most people do know about, which would be Chariots of Fire.
Sure.
So tell me the origin of that film, and then we'll go backward and forward.
Sure. That film, first of all, inspired me as a young man. I played the Vangelis album before every track meet or cross-country meet, and it won 4 Academy Awards in 1981, and it tells the story of two runners, Harold Abrams, who was a Jewish man who was really running to prove himself and to really, I think, to stop all of the persecution that he felt as a Jewish man. We see at the end of the film his funeral is in a church, and he in fact did become a Christian, but that's not covered in the focus of the film. The other character is Eric Little, and Eric was a committed Christian, and he was expected to prove himself as the fastest man in the world in the 100-meter dash at the Paris Olympics 1924. Harold Abrams was also running in that race. He was a strong contender. In fact, he tied the Olympic gold record, Harold Abrams did, at 10.6 seconds in the qualifying, the semifinals, and the final, all three races. He was very consistent, 10.6 seconds. And of course, that time has been bettered by far now. But in that day, running on a cinder track, that was a very good time. And in fact, as I said, the Olympic record. Eric Little, everything's pointing to this race, right? The 100-meter dash. And then Eric finds that one of the qualifying heats, is going to be run on a Sunday. And he says, I can't do it. That's a day to honor the Lord, not myself. And so he pulled out. Instead, he trained for the 400 meters and, in fact, broke the world record in that race. And he beat number two, Horatio Fitch, by 5 meters. And that distance was not bettered for 30 years. His world record was beaten shortly thereafter. It was more than a year, but less than five, I think. But that distance, he literally changed the way the race was run. He moved it from middle distance to sprint. And that was Eric Little that did that.
So who knew that but by intensively training in totally an opposite direction, he came up with something even better than he thought he could do.
Exactly. And his middle daughter, Heather, told me that he realized that by being forced into the 400, of course, he won the 400 all over Scotland. I was in the University of Edinburgh looking through his old track meet folders, and And he was very consistent. He won the 100, 220, and 440, and just again and again and again. I think he was only beaten in Scotland twice on two different occasions, and one of them was very early on in his career. So it wasn't a new race for him, but he really put his focus on it and showed the world it could be sprinted.
Obviously, for viewers of films and television that weren't alive in the 1920s, they had no contact or context with the original. The movie did a beautiful job.
It surely did.
But we're here actually to talk about what happened after that.
Yes.
So let's, okay, the movie has closed, the credits have rolled, the people are picking the popcorn out of their teeth, and we fast forward a couple of years. What happened to these guys?
Yeah, there's a small super title at the end of Chariots of Fire that I'm going to paraphrase, but it basically says that Eric Little went on to be a missionary in China, and where he died in a Japanese internment camp, and all of Scotland mourned. And it was that phrase that started a prayer of my heart that someday that story would be fleshed out. What happened? What happened over there? My grandparents were missionaries to Africa. I had already, as a junior in high school, I ran a cross-country race in China. And so I was very interested in what Eric Little did in China. And so my play, I do a one-man play called Beyond the Chariots, and it kind of fleshes out from 1925. In fact, it opens with a character, Micah, as an old man, talking about looking back, and he jumps into his childhood in a race, and as he sprints on the back wall, the years count down to 1925. And so my story picks up the very year after Eric broke the world record. So he had all of these offers, contracts, invitations at high prestige meets, and of course everyone was waiting for 1928, the next Olympics. What would he do there? Would he prove himself as the fastest man in the world if the heats were not run on a Sunday?
Right.
At Amsterdam, the Amsterdam Olympics. So there was all of this expectation, all of this hype, all of this glory, and he finished up his degree and moved to China. And he followed in the footsteps of his mentor, A.P. Cullen, who I nickname in my play Uncle Rupert. He was known somehow that nickname traveled throughout his lifetime. But Uncle Rupert, A.P. Cullen, went to China and he was teaching there. And Eric decided he'd follow in his footsteps. So he trained both with a theology degree and a science degree, and he taught at the Tianjin Anglo-Chinese College in Tianjin, China, and there he not only worked with the minds but also the bodies of the young Chinese there, and it was a prestigious school to get into, and so he was working with basically the future of China right there in that school.
Was his time there well documented?
It is. In fact, the best biography, I believe, is David McCaslin's Pure Gold, colon Eric Little. It's the story of his life, and that chapter is it's more than one chapter, but there's quite a lot on that period of his life. I don't spend a whole lot of time there. We jump to 1928 when Eric turns down the chance to run at the Amsterdam Olympics. He's invited, but he decides, you know, I've devoted my life to serving the students of this school, and I can't just go gallivanting off around the planet. So he gets to compete against Olympic athletes who were brought over from Amsterdam. So in October of 1928, the Japanese hosted a track meet in honor of the coronation of the Emperor of Japan. There were Olympic athletes there from France and, of course, Japan, and the meet took place there. He tied the winning time at the Amsterdam Olympics in the 220 and in the 440. The 100 was not – he didn't run in that race. My theory is it was either on Sunday or it was late enough on Saturday that he couldn't catch the 3 o'clock ferry. And so my play shows how he finishes the race and sprints then to the cab waiting for him to put him on the ferry so he can go teach Sunday school the next day. But the national anthem of the UK comes blaring on, and he halts at attention waiting for it to finish out so he can sprint. Then the French anthem comes on. He stops again. Finally, he gets to the cab. The ferry's already pulling out. He leaps 15 feet and catches the ferry.
So let's fast forward even more so.
Sure.
In our time machine, we're now at 2017.
Yes.
And this story continues to have legs.
Yes.
So tell me about where we are today.
Right. There's a movie coming out on November 3rd called On Wings of Eagles. And it literally fast forwards through all of what I've just said, goes right to the Japanese internment camp. On the day that Pearl Harbor is attacked, all citizens of allied nations are captured and put into internment camps. And I spoke with Jamie Hudson Taylor, who was the great-grandson of Hudson Taylor, the missionary into China back in the late 1800s. And he and his three siblings were at the Chifu School. And when Japan came in, they literally put labels on the people and on their belongings saying, this is the property of Japan. Then they were marched into these internment camps, and that is where Eric spent his last days.
And the film is soon to be released, and you're participating in some way.
Yes, I've been invited by the producers to speak after the first two, not the first two screenings. There's one at 11 p.m. I wasn't interested in that one. But on November 3rd at 11 a.m., I'll be speaking after the screening at the Cinema Village, and I believe that is 22 East 12th Street.
Okay.
And that is going to play again on Saturday at 11. I'll also be at that one. And then it'll play as long as they're selling seats.
As for your show, you still performing it?
I do, yes. And I'm planning also, hoping to hear back very soon about this, planning to release that soon as well, a recording of my performance at the Singapore Expo on the heels of the Singapore Youth Olympics in 2010.
Well, our guest on Spectrum this week has been Rich Swingle. Rich, it's very exciting, and we haven't known each other all that long, but there's always something interesting in everybody. And this was, of course, very timely, and it fit right into our Chinese motif for China America Radio. Let's keep in touch.
Sounds good.
You've got some Chinese experiences and some other theatrical things in your pathway coming up. So you share that with us, and thanks for stopping by. We hope that you have a good run with this story that's started back in the 1920s and is close to 100 years old at this point.
Yes. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Join us every weekend for Spectrum on China America Radio, a weekly public service program featuring news, information, lifestyle experiences, and stories of interest to our listeners in the United States and around the world. If you have suggestions for future topics or guests to be featured on an upcoming Spectrum program, send them to us at programming@chinaamericaradio.com.